Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Good morning again and welcome. My guest today, Anthony Barone Kolenc, known as Tony, is the author of 6 novels for teens, including his latest release, Penny and the Stolen Chalice, and his teen historical fiction series, The Harwood Mysteries. The Harwood Mysteries has won over a dozen book awards. Tony is also a columnist for Practical Homeschooling Magazine and the host of the Shepherd's Pie radio show and podcast. Good morning, Tony. Welcome back to Step Into the Light.
It is so great to be back with you, Patty. Thanks for having me.
Tony, I'm really excited to have you back, especially after reading one of your books, which I had not had the opportunity to read one when we did our interview back in 2021. So it was really exciting to read that book, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But first of all, we did do a show back a couple of years ago, and I don't want to repeat everything that we said then, but would you give us a brief summary of what led you to writing the Harwood Mystery Series? What age group is it targeted to?
Sure. The Harwood Mysteries is really a young adult fiction series, ages 10 and up, works well with especially older middle school and high school kids. And it is a medieval historical fiction adventure series filled with mystery, as you know. And what led me to write it was really, when I started the journey of the Harwood Mysteries, Harry Potter was still in its full flowering, and we were a homeschooling family. I have 5 kids. My son at the time was in his teens, and we were driving to Colorado, actually, because we were being stationed at the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, and so we had a lot of time on our hands, because that was before the days of smartphones on everybody's lap, and so we just got in a conversation as we were driving across the country. I was like, what would a good book series look like that, had sort of the fast pace and the mystery and the vibe of Harry Potter, but at the same time didn't have some of the baggage that some families really didn't like, such as worries about the occult or witchcraft or whatever, and that would have more kind of family-friendly values with it. That's when we decided, using my son as kind of a sounding board for ideas, how can I do this? What kind of story might it be? And we kind of came up with the thumbnail sketch of what would become Shadow in the Dark, which is book 1 in the Harwood Mysteries, and which was published by Loyola Press in 2020.
Well, Tony, I must full disclosure tell you, you sent me a copy of your 5th book in the series. And when I took a look at it and saw that it was, 12th century, I thought, this book is not going to do it for me at all. And let me tell you what, I opened the first few pages and I could not put it down. I was up at night reading that book I think it only took me like 3 or 4 days to read it. I just fell in love with the story. I thought to myself, no, don't ever judge a book by its time setting, because you never know. It was great.
I appreciate you saying that. And what's interesting, book 5, of course, these books go chronologically in, yes, the characters' lives. So you've missed a lot of stuff if you start the series with book 5. And the fact that you were still able to read and enjoy it means that I at least accomplished one of my goals, which was to make it so that a reader didn't have to read the other book in order to actually enjoy the series. Although, I still would ask, why wouldn't you start with book 1? Why start with book 5?
I do actually plan to go back and get those first 4 books, Tony, and read them when time allows, because I was very engrossed in the story, and I thought, wow, I've got to read what comes before. And I also went on Amazon and read some of the reviews from those first 4 books, and I'm thinking, oh, yeah, this is something that I would really enjoy reading. So you can rest assured that hopefully within the next couple of months anyway, I'll get a chance to read those 4 books. Since you were on the show last in, I think it was December of 2021, you have written and published books 4 and 5. Tell us about those 2 books. Give us a brief summary. You gave us a summary of the first 3 back on the last interview. So tell us about books 4 and 5 and what are the main themes that you address in these later books?
Sure. And maybe if it's all right, can I very quickly just kind of lay out the setting of the series, because I think that will help with answering your question.
Definitely. Yeah. And I know there's some folks that won't go back and listen to that first interview. There's some that will. So that's what I'm thinking, that we don't want to repeat everything we said, but yes, a summary would be great, Tony. So please do that.
Yeah. So the Harwood Mysteries takes place in 12th century England in Yorkshire. It starts off in book 1, Shadow in the Dark, where my main character, his village, he's a peasant boy, his village gets attacked by bandits, he loses his memory, and he winds up being taken in by the monks at Harwood Abbey, which is how the series gets its name. These are Benedictine monks. You're in 12th century England with Benedictine monks and nuns. There's a nunnery, you know, co-located on the ground. And that's where, you know, my main character, whose name is given to him by the monks after Alexander the Great, but they shorten it to Zan, X-A-N. So Zan, who's 11 years old, meets Lucy, who's also 11 years old. She happens to be, you know, having been left at the nunnery by her dad while he was traveling around. And in that first book, really, it's sort of a book about suffering and about why do bad things happen to good people. And, you know, the theme of the shadow in the dark is sort of like this mysterious, almost grim reaper figure that's roaming around the abbey grounds at night. And so Zan and Lucy are trying to solve that mystery, and at the same time these bandits are all involved. So that's Shadow in the Dark. And then we move in book 2. Zan gets his memory back, but he keeps his new name. And we move into the Haunted Cathedral, where Zan and Lucy travel to a large city for that time period called Lincoln. And there's Lincoln Cathedral, where it's just where we get the name of the book, the Haunted Cathedral. And the cathedral is rumored to be haunted by the ghost of a little girl. And so Zan and Lucy, and they meet the third main character, Christina, who is about a year older than Zan and Lucy. She's kind of a real fireball, Christina is. You know, Lucy's like a, kind of this very kind of a holy, devout girl. Christina's not unholy or undevout, but she's much more worldly, you know, and her parents want her to marry a rich man, and she's, you know, very beautiful and kind of, you know, knows it. So the three of them essentially have to solve this mystery. And book 2 is really about forgiveness. Zan is actually confronted with the bandit who burned his village down, and he really does not want to forgive this bandit, even though the bandit seems remorseful for what he's done. And so book 2, the theme is really about forgiveness. And then book 3 moves us into back to another monastery, and it's called, the book 3 is called The Fire of Eden, and that's sort of a jewel thief book. Christina is back in Lincoln, but Zan and Lucy are at this Grenton Priory, where a ruby gets stolen that belongs to one of the monks' families, that happens to be a rich family. They are basically trying to figure out who stole the ruby, and the theme in book 3 is really about pride. Zan kind of starts to get full of himself, and we often do in this world when things sometimes go our way and we start having some success, like Zan has solved a few mysteries. So book 3 really kind of is how do you deal with, you know, not letting yourself get puffed up with pride. And as we know, pride always comes before a fall. And so Lucy helps Zan sort of realize some of his mistakes in that book. And then you asked about book 4 and book 5. So book 4 is called The Merchant's Curse, and it brings us back to Lincoln. Lucy is not in book 4. She stays up at Harwood Abbey, and Zan travels to Lincoln, where his uncle lived, actually, and he goes to live with his uncle. And Christina is there. So Christina and Zan are sort of really paired up in this book, and there's a possibility maybe, you know, of some romance, but Christina is actually very interested in he's in his 20s, you know, kind of ambitious young man who seems to have his eye on her to marry her. And so then it's sort of now confronted with that reality. But book four is really, it's about this kind of witchy woman who seems to curse one of the business partners of Zan's uncle. And the guy starts to die. And Zan and Christine are trying to figure out, is this a real witch? Was this a real curse? And how can we fix it if it is? And then there's all this historical stuff that's going on in book four too, related to King Henry II and his family. And, you know, Zan gets, you know, viewed as a traitor to the king as part of this plot, kind of a subplot going on. And I should, by the way, mention that although all my books have a very spooky vibe, remember I said I wrote them to not be like Harry Potter. So
yes.
Families shouldn't worry about any of the content being in any way, you know, encouraging, you know, the occult or anything that would not be consistent with Christian values. I try to make them very spooky, but I don't want to give away things, but let's just say that the books have won many awards from Christian organizations because there really is no, you know, objectionable type immoral content in that sense. It's not trying to promote bad things. Anyway,
right.
So that was the first four books, and book four actually is a case study on the book of Ecclesiastes, which is my favorite book in the Old Testament for some reason. And, you know, that's the one that King Solomon, although I don't think it's King Solomon, but, you know, the author seems to be King Solomon, and he starts the book saying, vanity of vanities, everything is vanity. And then King Solomon goes through and talks about all the lessons he's learned in his life about how people pursue so many different vanities of this world, and none of it, it's all vanity, none of it saves them. The fool dies, the wise man dies, but, you know, everybody meets their maker. And so some people view it as a very cynical book, but I really love it because I think it brings home a lot of the lessons that we experience in our lives, you know, and that kids are going to experience, seek after different things in the world. So yeah, so that's sort of the theme of book four is really about, you know, vanities, the vanities of this world.
I did want to ask you about that because when I was looking at reviews for the books that I haven't read, and one of the reviewers mentioned something about the book of Ecclesiastes, and I thought, oh my goodness, I've got to ask Tony, why would he use that book as a basis for a story? You just explained, but it was one of the questions I had wanted to bring up this morning. So thank you for sharing that with us, and now you can proceed with what you were going to say. Sorry I interrupted you.
Oh, no, I've been going on and on. No, but, you know, like I said, it is my favorite book. And then, you know, I saw a Christian movie years ago. I think it was about some sort of a musician who made it big and then pursued all the vanities of his career and left his family behind. And it shows how it brought him unhappiness and everything. And I don't remember the title of the movie, but it was basically sort of a, you know, based on Ecclesiastes also. And I thought, wow, I really love how they've done this. If I ever get the chance, I would love to try to do a similar thing with, you know, one of my books. And then
right.
When I got to this one about, you know, with book four, I was like, this is the perfect book. So like, every character sort of is dealing with some different kind of vanity. Like I remember I said, Christina is very beautiful. And so, you know, she has sort of the vanity of worldly beauty. And, you know, some of the characters are greedy and some of them have, you know, powerful friends. That's how Zan gets himself tied into this King Henry II plot. And Zan is pursuing wisdom. He wants to be like King Solomon. But even in Ecclesiastes, Solomon, the voice of Solomon basically says even wisdom, pursuing wisdom is a vanity. And so there's a lot of really cool things in there. And I know it doesn't sound like at this point it's a kid's book, but trust me, the book four is actually my favorite. It won all sorts of awards, and it's got a lot of very suspenseful moments in it, along with a little bit of clean and sweet romance possibly kind of going on in the background.
Well, I could just remember a long time ago someone making the comment, probably in a Bible study or a Sunday school class or something, saying, if you're ever going to introduce somebody to the Bible who is not familiar with it, do not start them with the book of Ecclesiastes.
No, that is one of the reasons, because when you see the book of Ecclesiastes played out sort of with real characters, and I do think it's hard to understand what the author of Ecclesiastes was actually like. What are you trying to tell us here at the end?
And, correct.
You know,
yeah.
The way I interpret it, the way I interpret Ecclesiastes is sort of the way that Zan interprets it at the end of the book, which is we can't pursue all these different things in the world. We're all going to meet our maker, and we have to live our lives in a way to be ready to meet our maker, because
right.
he will be our judge. I think that's a positive spin on the book of Ecclesiastes, but it's so clever, and there are so many phrases from Ecclesiastes that people may not realize that came out of Ecclesiastes, little proverbs and things that are there. You know, of course, you know the old song, turn, turn, turn for every season,
yes.
you know.
That's
basically straight out of Ecclesiastes, the vanity of vanities, everything's vanity, of course. So there's a lot of really cool, and I went through like with a lot. I mean, I pulled like everything I could pull out of Ecclesiastes, and sometimes the words wind up on the mouths of some of the characters. Sometimes it's actually what Zan is studying, because he's studying the book of Ecclesiastes. But anyway, enough about that. I just, it's an exciting story too, because there is this whole sort of pretty spooky witch plot that's going on that appears to be like, could this really be a real witch? Actually, that's the other thing that is interesting. I like to explore some of these interesting situations that our youth do get pulled into, you know, the occult and things like that. So,
yes.
you know, they're interested in this. But like in book two, where the cathedral is supposed to be haunted by the ghost of a little girl, Zan gets into a conversation with one of the monks who's like, no, there's no ghosts. And Zan's like, but wait, but you believe in, you know, heaven and you know, communion of saints, and that there are saints in heaven. So, you know, what's the difference between like a ghost and a saint? You know, and those kinds of discussions. And book four is interesting because, if you remember, there's a very spooky story in the Old Testament about King Saul and the Witch of Endor, where
yes.
King Saul, the day before he dies, you know, goes to consult this witch, and she's the Witch of Endor, because that's where she lives. And he asks her, what's going to happen at this battle? And she conjures up the spirit of the prophet Samuel. And basically, the guy's already dead. So she conjures up Samuel's spirit, and he tells Saul that Saul is going to die and his whole family is going to get slaughtered. And, you know, it's like this very doom and gloom kind of thing. And, of course, it all comes true the next day. So bring up that story, like, you know, and the fact that the Bible does talk about witchcraft and, you know, the evils of witchcraft and all this kind of thing. So it's important to even realize, yeah, the Bible really does address these, you know, really serious topics, you know, so being able to do it in a way that kids would enjoy the story, but also, you know, can be learning about some of these things has been important to me.
Absolutely, Tony. Yes, I agree with you. Yeah, I kind of always enjoyed Ecclesiastes, but I don't think a person wants to read the first couple of chapters and then just leave it, because it could be a little bit depressing if you don't take it in the whole entirety of the book. But anyway, enough about that. We'll take a break here, where I remind listeners that you are listening to Step Into the Light with host Patty Sheen. My guest today is Tony Kolenc, author of the award-winning young adult series, The Harwood Mysteries, and his latest release, Penny and the Stolen Chalice. If you would like to listen to this episode again, or hopefully refer it to friends and family, it is on archive. The most current 5 episodes can be found on the homepage at pattysheen.com. That's spelled PATTISHENE.com. The Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page will give you access to archived episodes. Under each episode is a More Information tab that provides links to guest website, social media, and other resource information. Let's return to our interview with Tony. Tony, you haven't really told us yet about book 5.
Yeah, so book five just got released in October of 2023. It just the other day won two book awards. I'm so excited now because that brings
neat.
The total for the series up to 14 awards, which has been
wow.
such a blessing. You know, as an author, you always like wonder, hey, you know, whether the book is selling or not, you know, you always wonder, is it any good? And so, you know, there is that, you know, outside affirmation of, okay, it looks like somebody thinks it's okay. But, yeah, book five just won an Illumination Silver Medal, and it won a first place in the Independent Press Book Awards, the Gabbies. So I was excited about that because now all the books have a gold medal associated with them. So I kind of feel like, all right, that's great. Now I better not ruin it for book six, which is going to come out in October of 24 and will be the final book in the series. But yeah, so you picked up book five, which is interesting. It's called Murder at Penwood Manor. This one is my, you know, homage to like an Agatha Christie murder mystery. Now, have you read a lot of Agatha Christie in your lifetime?
Tony, to be honest, I have never read an Agatha Christie book in my whole life.
Oh, my. Okay. Well, I used to read them as a kid.
I was a Nancy Drew fan when I was a kid.
Okay. Well, Nancy Drew's good, too, but I don't know that there were too many mm-hmm. murders in Nancy Drew. But I think some of the, you know, like Nancy Drew reads like my book three, The Fire of Eden, where it's like a jewel that gets stolen. That probably
okay.
has the feel of a Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew. Book
yeah,
five
probably.
Reads like a whodunit murder mystery. You got a cast of
yes.
suspects that all potentially could be guilty of murder. And then Christina and Lucy. So they're all back now at Harwood Manor and at, I'm sorry, Harwood Abbey. And, you know, back in the Middle Ages, these abbeys actually owned towns. And that's, you know, the Benedictines, some of them were very, very wealthy monasteries because they would have many manors as part of the, you know, the manor, the manorial system. And that was when feudalism was, you know, at its peak. And so, but Harwood Abbey is not a rich abbey. It has two manors. One of them is called Penwood Manor. So there's a murder. A blacksmith gets murdered. And the main suspect is a crusader who has just returned from the Holy Land. His name is Lawrence. And so this was a pivotal book for me because this series takes place from 1184 to 1188. The Third Crusade begins essentially in 1189. And so I've been building up, in every book I kind of been, you know, building up to the Third Crusade. And that's a big one. People know the Third Crusade if they know any crusade, because that's the one where King Richard the Lionheart, one of the sons of King Henry II, you know, goes on the crusade. And people might remember this because if they ever, like, watch Robin Hood, this is the same time as Robin Hood. And if they watch the old Sean Connery playing Richard the Lionheart coming back from the crusades, and Robin Hood is, you know, dealing with Sheriff of Nottingham because the king is gone on crusade. So that's the time period that we're in, really. We're in the same time period as Robin Hood here. Basically, Jerusalem is about to fall to the Muslims again under Saladin, the famous sultan. And so that event, as you know, takes place right at the very end of Book 5. And because I really wanted Book 5 to be a real prep for the crusade coming up, I made the main suspect this, you know, crusader who had been in the Holy Land, because of course there were always Christians going back and forth to the Holy Land on crusade, even when there weren't major crusades going on. And so you kind of see this haunted soldier returning from war. I mean, which I'm a military veteran myself. I spent 21 years yes. in the Air Force, and I actually currently work at Ave Maria School of Law in Naples, Florida. And I run a veterans clinic and, you know, help veterans. And some of them are veterans with PTSD who have come back from war traumatized. So that's kind of what we've got in our main character. He comes back sort of haunted. And there's a murder that he sure looks like he's the guilty party of. And Dan and Christina and Lucy are trying to figure out if he really is the guilty party before he gets hung. And so it allows me to sort of get into the background of the Crusades a little bit more, to, you know, talk a little bit about the, you know, the horrors of war, even all in the context of what I think is a sort of a fun murder mystery, like, you know, the old Agatha Christie books I used to read as a kid. And the theme, by the way, for book five is envy. People don't ever talk about envy as much as I think they probably should, and they don't really understand maybe the difference between like envy and jealousy, and how diabolical a sin envy is. In this book, it's a murder mystery, right? And when we think about the very first murder in the Bible, it's Cain and Abel. And why did Cain murder his brother Abel? Out of envy, because God accepted Abel's gift and Cain just couldn't deal with it. And instead of dealing with his own deficiencies, he decided he was going to take it out on his brother. It leads to the first murder. So I thought it would make sense to talk about envy in this context too.
Yes, and it was a good story. I very much enjoyed it, and I saw that theme of envy come through very strong. And Tony, you had to have done some rather extensive research to write this series. What similarities do you see in the young people of the 12th century versus the young people of today? Do you see any similarities?
Sure. I mean, that we know as Christians that human nature is human nature. Adam and Eve's human nature is our human nature. And so in some sense, kids aren't any different in many ways, because kids of the Middle Ages were still human beings. They still wanted what we all want in this world. They still struggled with the same sins and vices that we struggle with. And in many ways, you know, I want my characters to be accessible to modern teens. And so I write them in a way I think that is accessible. But at the same time, they're living in a very different world in many ways than what we're dealing with today. There are a lot of those things I like to bring out. For instance, marriage. You know, my characters start off at 11 years old, but by the time we get to book five, they are like 15 and 16. Many, many teens in the Middle Ages would have been married off by that age. And in fact, that's one of the possibilities going on with one of the characters, is potentially getting married. And though that seems young to us, but it wouldn't have seemed young to them, you know, where people died a lot earlier in life and this kind of thing. So there's sort of like those types of issues. Also, like my characters are mostly either peasants or on the lower end of the, you know, scale. They're not royals. They're not rich. And so you kind of get a sense of how was it like to be a poor person living in this time. It could be shocking to some of the kids to find out, you know, for instance, that if you were a peasant child living on in a manor, your landlord, that's where we get kind of that landlord concept even still today, your landlord essentially owns you. In book two, there's a whole subplot where Zan has to pay what's called head money to his landlord. He can't even he can't get married, he can't live at the monastery and become a monk. He can't do anything unless his landlord gives him permission, or if he buys his freedom, because he's a serf, which is kind of the lowest of the peasants. It's almost like human trafficking, really. It's kind of slavery to some extent. You know, and seeing that, you know, kids even in that time period, you know, that would have been the way all peasant kids were living at that time. You know, they were all basically servants of their masters. So there's some really startling differences in just sort of the culture that kids would have been growing up in, but they're still playing games. It's, you know, researched some of the medieval games that kids played, and some of them are not all that different than the games I played as a kid, you know, tag and hide and seek and, you know, blind man's buff and things like that, that all had sort of medieval counterparts to them. So that's always fun. And then also the education. Almost nobody was literate except for the monks. So Zan, as a peasant, gets taught how to read and write in Latin mostly, but also in the common tongue, which of course would have been like Old English. But I don't get too far into that kind of detail because you wouldn't understand anything anybody said if I wrote it in Old English. but Zan is being educated in a way that literally like nobody but like royals and like monks and nuns would be educated. Everybody else, reading, writing wasn't something they knew anything about. And so that's kind of interesting too, to see how limited your and for girls, for young women growing up, I mean, let's just say that their job opportunities were slim. They could get married, they could become a nun. Otherwise, what, they were going to be some sort of a maid servant or something like that. They didn't have a lot of options to them either. So that's kind of interesting too. And I have sort of put a little bit of a modern spin on some of the characters. Christina comes close to being as close to what you could imagine a feminist might look like in 12th century England. in the best sense of the word, though, not in sort of the most modern sense of the word, but somebody who is more standing up for women being treated more equal, perhaps. So yeah, there's some of that going on there too.
What are your thoughts about today's young people face as far as their faith issues versus back then? Do you think that, again, it's kind of almost equal, or do you think that there was more pressure in one time period or another to stand up for your faith and to face that adversity?
Well, one of the reasons I set this series in the 12th century, you know, going back to why I wrote the series, was because it's very easy to bring faith into a story like this when you're living in 12th century England around monks and nuns, because the entire, you know, worldview of most medieval people would have revolved around the church. You know, this was, of course, hundreds of years before the Protestant Reformation, so really it's just the Catholic Church in the West. And then, of course, you know, the Byzantium, you know, the Eastern Church in Byzantine, it's after the schism of 1054. So the church is split east and west, but we're in the west. So really, there's just the Catholic Church. And your entire life, and you see it in the, you know, like the festivals going on at different times of the year. Most of my books are set in different periods of the year, and there's usually something going on, and it's almost always revolving around something related to the, you know, the church, Christianity, celebrating some, you know, mystery of Jesus or whatever. So faith is all around, but at the same time, several of my characters that are encountered by Zan and Lucy and Christina are not people of faith. And you get this idea of like life is difficult, it's hard to have faith sometimes. And even in the Middle Ages, especially if there's a lot of death and you're losing people, not everybody is going to respond to that in the eyes of faith. So there are times throughout the series where Zan and the others do have to confront kind of a non-faith worldview. And again, I did that very purposely because I think our youth today are confronting it much worse. You know, we're in what some people would call a post-Christian world now. Everywhere they go, there's challenges to their faith. Whereas in Zan's time, it was very much at the height of Christendom, and it would be more the opposite. You know, everybody would believe, and there'd be just a few people who might stand out as not having faith. So that's kind of interesting. And then book six, which is, like I said, going to be the final one coming out.
Yes.
That one is going to bring Zan and Lucy and Christina and some others out of England on their way towards the Holy Land. And they actually are going to wind up in Muslim Portugal, which wasn't Portugal at the time because it was part of a Muslim kingdom. But in modern day Portugal, they're going to wind up at a Muslim city run by totally Muslim culture where Christians and Jews are just a very small minority. And so that is really interesting in book six, which we can talk about next year, because you want to talk about a confrontation of faith views. that's really the first time that any of my characters are exposed to the fact that there's like an entire other world religion that just sees things totally different and treats Christians differently. And this is, of course, leading into what's going to be the Third Crusade, is between Christians and Muslims, of course. You've got all of this sort of wartime buildup going on under the surface, in addition just to normal faith clashes between two world religions.
Now, stepping back a little bit, Tony, my feeling also is that not only is it hard for young people to stand up for their faith, but it's even hard these days for parents to instill any kind of faith in their young people, because all of the pressure, and this is a subject for a whole different podcast, but that thought crossed my mind as you were speaking, that in today's day and age, back when I was growing up, you went to church. I mean, there was no question about that. Everybody went to church on Sunday. Businesses were closed on Sunday. There was a very healthy respect for the holy day of Sunday. And now things have changed so much. So that thought just kind of flitted through my brain as you were talking. And it's a subject that we could talk about for an hour in a whole different show. But that just kind of
Right.
crossed my mind. I thought I would bring that up.
No, that's really why I wrote this, honestly,
mm-hmm.
because
exactly,
you
yeah.
know, parents nowadays, their kids are just being fed so much that brings them away from the faith. I wanted to create something that would be attractive and enjoyable, but would bring people toward God, would bring kids and youth and teens especially closer to God, at least pull them in that direction, because everything else is pulling them in the opposite direction.
Yes. At least plant that seed, Tony, to make them go out on their own and explore deeper into faith. Maybe take a look at the Bible and look at some of these other books that are faith-based. And sometimes the books that we write are just meant to plant those seeds in our readers.
Exactly.
And if we've accomplished that, we've done a great thing. I know you're excited to talk about your latest release, which came out on the 4th of March, called Penny and the Stolen Chalice. So give us a little bit of a snippet on what we can expect from that one.
Yes, this is totally my first book not in the Harwood Mysteries series. As Harwood Mysteries
okay.
is winding down, this is a standalone book right now. I don't know. There's a possibility there could be a sequel, but right now it's a slightly younger audience. I'm really looking more at fourth through sixth grade probably as the key audience for this. And so it's a little shorter book. It's got, you know, some illustrations in it, and it takes place at a modern contemporary school in the United States. It's actually at a Catholic school, and the sixth grade girl, Penny, is actually, she's not Catholic, but not unusual nowadays. Catholic schools have a lot of different kids of faith, different faith in them. And so her and her friend Jaden have to solve this mystery, because while they are at church, you know, Catholic kids at Catholic school, they go to Mass every week. And while they're at Mass during the school day, somebody pulls the fire alarm in the church. And after it's evacuated, somebody steals the chalice off of the altar in the middle of the service while communion is still not, you know, even over. So all of a sudden, we have this whole mystery that is centered on this idea of who would want to steal a chalice in the middle of the church service. Penny, you know, really has to try to figure this out. And it's going to turn out that the motive for actually stealing the chalice has something to do with the very issue of being in the middle of a service. So it's really, again, kind of it's meant to plant seeds. You know, definitely more because it takes place at a Catholic school, definitely probably more of a Catholic audience for this one than maybe the Harwood Mysteries, which is more, just general Christian. But mm-hmm. but it's a lot of fun, and Penny is a lot of fun. I got to finally write a first-person, young girl character, and, you know, the whole thing is told from Penny's point of view. And so she's just a lot of fun to kind of be it's fun for me to be a sixth grade girl.
Well, it sounds like an interesting book, Tony, and I want to wish you the very best with it. And my goodness, I want to congratulate you on all the awards that you have won for your Harwood Mystery series. That's just great news. And I know that for young people that read these stories, that their hearts will definitely be touched with an important message. You can be sure that somehow, some way, I'm going to find the time to go back and read those first four books and then book six. So,
yes, when we talk about book six, boy, there is some amazing stuff going on in book six. It's definitely the book that's going to end the series. It's got all the fireworks, all the closure, you know, all the loose ends have to be tied up that have been going on in the whole series. So it was a lot of fun to write, and a little sad to write too, but we'll talk about that another day.
Okay, Tony. Was there anything else before we do wind down the show that you would like to share with listeners today? I kind of wanted to talk about your podcast. Just put a pitch in for that, your Shepherd's Pie podcast, for any listeners that are interested in books written for young people and some of the issues that are facing young people today. So if you want to say a couple of words about that, you're free to do so.
Sure. Thank you. Yeah, The Shepherd's Pie is in its third season. The first two seasons were really focused on, really, I always brought in a lot of authors and a lot of teen, you know, YA authors, a lot of people from like Tyndale House and friends of mine from the Catholic Writers Guild who, you know, write in this area. And we talked a lot about youth issues and things that impact youth. For season three this year, I actually opened it up to focus more on, not that I'm excluding youth issues, but it's not exclusively youth issues now. So it's really focused more on kind of our messy lives and how through some of the difficulties in our lives. My most recent episode, I actually do interview someone and we talk about the benefits of classical education. I've also had recent episodes, you know, talking to a caregiver for someone who had Alzheimer's, and like, how do you keep your faith in those situations? I had a chance to, during January for like pro-life month, you know, I had a chance to interview an abortion survivor, Melissa Odin, who was just amazing to talk about those issues. So it, you know, this season, you know, I'm hitting some themes that, you know, I didn't necessarily hit any others. But yeah, you can find all of this stuff on my website, antonykolenk.com. No H in Anthony. That has not just The Shepherd's Pie. You can actually listen to the episodes right off the website. But it also has, you know, all the news about my books, Harwood Mysteries, Penny, and short stories I usually give away. I have a few Lucy short stories that I've written, and I will often give one of those away free for just people coming to the website and signing up on an email list. And then I also have my like whole other life of being a law professor, so all of my nonfiction stuff is also accessible on there. So it's kind of one-stop shopping.
Yes, and for those who would like to know, in the past interview back in December of 2021, I think it was December, we talked quite a bit about your Air Force history, about your homeschooling, about the advocate, I guess, I would say that you are as an author for homeschooling parents and some of the issues that they deal with on the legal side of things. So if our listeners are interested in going back that episode, I'll explain at the end of the show where to find all that kind of stuff. But anyway, Tony, can't thank you enough for coming back on the show today. It was just a joy to visit with you and to hear the excitement in your voice about this series, and may God continue to bless you in all of your writing and ministry endeavors.
Thank you so much, Patty, and thank you so much for what you do. I know how hard it is to keep a podcast going year after year, and the fact that you're still out there fighting the good fight, getting you know, great messages out there for people, I think is awesome. So thanks for doing that.
Well, thank you so much. Listeners, in closing, thank you so much for listening today. If you would like to listen to this show again, it is on archive. Go to my website, which is pattysheene.com. That's spelled P-A-T-T-I-S-H-E-N-E.com. The most current 5 episodes are found right on the home page. You'll find the Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page. Click on that. It will give you a link to all the shows we have aired to date. Under each show is a more information tab. Click on that and you will find more information about our guests, such as website and social media contacts. I can also be found on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Pinterest as Patty Sheen. Until next time, God bless you.